Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
An Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. We're almost officially to summertime. And if you look at the weather forecast for this weekend, it is going to feel like summertime. Temperatures approaching triple digits this weekend, so be ready for that. That's sort of the way we expect it to be. Hope everybody doing well, staying as cool as possible. I was outside most of the day, Yeah, fortunately, there's been a little bit of a breeze at times, but it's another hot one today. So hope everybody staying, hydrated, and if you have to be outside. But welcome into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us here in the studio. JC, how you doing?
Doing good. How about y'all?
Do you want to tell the folks what you were doing outside most of the day? Sure.
I mean, younger son who I'd mentioned had bought us tickets, and we're headed to Birmingham and go to Rickwood Field to watch the Cardinals and the Giants tomorrow.
Okay.
That was my Father's Day.
Yeah.
Present from Matt, and it didn't really come with a string attached, but he goes, "Dad, can you help me put a shed together?" Yeah, so we've been working on that, and actually until we got to the last part before we were going to take a break, things have been going pretty well. It's one of those where it doesn't have a lot of words, just pictures, and those are tough.
It's awful.
And there'd been some reviews on this particular shed where people said the holes don't line up. I had to drill new holes, and we thought that was the case, but turned out, no, it wasn't. The only thing is, as we put the last piece of the roof on, now still got to put the trim around the roof and the door.
Is this a metal one?
This is a metal one.
Did your hands get all cut up?
Not too bad. I've only got one place on me.
We did that one time.
Sharp. It is sharp. Yeah, I mean, we still got to put the door frame, the door, the bracing for the door, and more. But we about to have the roof up. And realized, oh, those pieces of the roof shouldn't have overlapped two sections, just one, because it left a gap in both the front and the back. So it's like, as I was leaving to quickly try to cool off, there's a little gap in the front and the back. So all the screws that are on the top of it are going to have to come off. So I've got a project for after the show as well. But great to be here for the drive. You know, sad news last night. Speaking of the Giants and the Cardinals at Rickwood, it had been hoped until, I guess it was just Monday, that Willie Mays, Birmingham native and, played with the Birmingham Black Barons, would be able to be there and part of the big ceremonies that were going. Well, on Monday, was it Monday or Yeah, on Monday, Willie had sent word that he would not be able to be at Rickwood Field. And then yesterday, very sadly, he passed away at the age of 93. So, I mean, it's I think there will probably be even more focus on the game tomorrow night at Rickwood Field.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question. When you talk about one of the greatest to ever play the game, and then the fact that it would have been in his hometown. I mean,
right.
Fairfield's right there. And so, I think it's going to have, a little bit more impact for sure on that game.
Tremendously sad news. Hopefully it inspires younger people to learn about Willie Mays if they're not terribly familiar with his story and why He's such a significant figure in American sports history. But it's a yeah. It's I mean he was, you know, famously called the greatest living ball player for much of the last you know.
The Say Hey Kid. I mean,
last
he
few
was
decades. Giants icon, San Francisco.
Well,
icon.
Baseball icon. I mean, he was
American sports icon.
For some folks that are too young to have seen Willie play, I don't know that I ever saw him play in person.
Yeah,
but I mean, I watched a lot of him playing. You know, as I was a youngster growing up,
career ends in early 70s, right?
Yes. Yes.
With the Mets.
He started his career in New York with the New York Giants, moved west with him to San Francisco, and then wrapped things up with the Mets.
Final at bat is in a World Series with the Mets, I want to say. Is that the, because they went to the, I believe they went to the World Series in one of the two. Isn't that correct? Didn't they go, I believe they made a postseason
run? If it was early 70s, I don't think the Mets were
maybe
in the World Series.
Maybe a postseason run?
69, right.
Yeah, maybe his last at bat with the Giants was
an
yeah, may have been. But, I mean, to try to compare him or to relate the type, I mean, first of all, the athletic ability, he was unbelievable. He could do everything. He could run, he could hit, he could throw. He was a tremendous fielder, one of the greatest catches all time ever in the World Series against the Indians.
Vic Wirtz.
I was on again with Wimp and Barry Sanderson this morning. I didn't realize Wimp Sanderson, like Spence McCracken, a huge fan of the Cleveland Indians. And when I mentioned that, he said, yeah, he made the greatest catch that ruined my life. He said he was a freshman in high school when that happened, and he remembered he was – It was his library period, so they were able to be following the ball game when Willie Mays made the catch.
73 World Series was Mets A's with Yogi Berra managing the New York Mets with Willie Mays, who had just been acquired. Wow. That was his final appearance in Major League Baseball.
I was going to say
Reggie Jackson.
Some folks maybe of if you're in your 30s. Maybe a little earlier than that, you can relate to Ken Griffey and just the persona that he had. I mean, he was always up, always smiling. I mean, it's one of those, he was had a magnetic personality, Willie Mays did. He always seemed, you know, upbeat and ready to play some more.
I would say that's Mariners Griffey. And
yes.
Then I would think
early Ken Griffey Jr.
The last decade of Griffey's life, I think, was marred by
injuries
and a more surly turn towards the media that he thought was being unfair towards him.
Correct, and they couldn't get to the over the hump to do the things he wanted to do. I think about this generation, a guy like Andrew Jones would be a guy that people go, man, he had all those tools.
Right.
That would be
except Willie was able to do it for 20-something consecutive years.
Much longer.
In 24 All-Star games. Yeah. Now there's a little asterisk to that, because for a few years there were two All-Star games. A lot of fans may not realize
that's why he has 24 All-Star game appearances in a career that goes from like 51 to 73, right? You go, well, wait a minute. Like, what's the how does that necessarily work? But yeah, so you know, there were years where there was. It's also worth pointing out when you mention the number of Gold Gloves that Willie Mays won. I don't think they introduced that award until he was already 8 or 10 years into his Major League Baseball career. So I mean, he also that's another one where maybe it doesn't necessarily add up with his reputation, because you told me a story last night, right, about who the better.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now I had the Fox game on, which was the Yankees and Orioles. I flipped it on. It was near the end of the game, and I heard them. They were, of course, talking. I mean, Bob Costas was, as impressive as anybody you could ever imagine, just waxing eloquent about his first ball game that he went to see the Giants in New York in 57. He said his dad made a point of pointing out, hey, that is Willie Mays. That's the player you need to watch. That's Willie Mays. But the other – and I didn't catch – I don't know who the other announcer was there in the booth last night. But it was obviously a former Brace. Didn't sound like Smoltz, but wasn't sure who it was, but he had been a teammate of Andre Jones. And they had shown a picture of Willie and Hank.
Could it have been Frank Coeur?
Yeah, it may have been.
Yeah, because
it may have been
because he does.
That's probably who it was. Now that I think about it, but they showed a picture of Willie and Henry Aaron, and they were talking about the pair of them, and yes, the other announcer talked about being a teammate of Andrew Jones and asking Henry Aaron, how does Andrew Jones rank against the best you've ever seen? And he said, is he up there with Willie Mays? And he said, Hank Aaron turned to him and said, son, Andrew's JV. He said, Andrew's my boy, but he's JV compared to Willie Mays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to compare eras because you look at these guys and you go, well, these guys are bigger and stronger. Well, those guys didn't have weight training. Those guys didn't play baseball, mm-hmm. didn't have, all the things they didn't do. It was natural. And it was, these guys grew up playing the game. And for me, it was growing up reading books because that's what I had. I had books about Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and those guys. And that's how I learned and the history.
The little biography.
Yeah, absolutely. I read those that you got in the library. My brother had all
Gehrig
these.
Gehrig and Ruth and all those.
That's how I learned, and that's how I learned the story and the background and the history. And so it's funny that, these are the guys that I probably knew more about than anybody because I'd read those books every night before I went to bed. That's what I did.
I'm looking at his record, his career numbers. You realize he missed. There's a lot of people talk. I've heard a lot of talk through the years about the time that Ted Williams missed. Because of his time in the military, Willie Mays only played 34 games in the year that he was 21 years old, and then missed his entire 22-year season because he was in military service in Korea. So he missed almost two full seasons, and still finished with 660 home runs.
He lived the kind of life that you make a big budget movie, like a biopic about, right? Like he's the kind of subject where he's the kind of person where he lived the sort of life in history where even fictional Forrest Gump was a fictional character that lived through these very significant events in history.
Correct.
Willie Mays is one of those genuine American original heroes that impacted so many different.
There's
aspects
a reason
of culture.
Why that generation is called what it is. Because of the sacrifices that had to be made. And he's one of those guys. And you're right. Hank Aaron, deservedly so, gets much more press because he held the home run record and did these things. Willie Mays was an incredible player. And I think for the baseball fans, the average person, probably Hank Aaron is probably the guy that you point to. If you're, hey, Willie Mays is somebody that those people say, hey, that was the guy.
And I would say people maybe know more about Jackie Robinson because Jackie Robinson.
The movie.
Because of his movie, but also because of the impact he made.
He broke the barrier.
Breaking the color barrier.
Right.
Willie Mays, I think, the racial aspect and the fact that he was also a pioneer very early in baseball's time as an integrated sport is a significant part of it. But it's also his sheer greatness. He's just one of the ultimate five tool players, and doing it with trying to find a modern comparison personality wise, I would think. I guess Ortiz was an all time great who always had that sort of smile, but Ortiz had a temper and it could boil over a little bit too. Early Griffey makes some sense.
Early Junior is what it, because it's like everybody. Just love to watch him play because he seemed to enjoy playing so much. I didn't realize this. I was a Yankees fan, so I was a Mickey guy, and I was like, oh, if Mickey could have been healthy, but Willie, the numbers.
What about the Duke?
Duke and Gil were, I thought, really good, but they weren't.
A song?
It's Willie Mickey and the Duke.
Willie Mickey and the Duke, who had the best center fielder.
Yeah. But. Listen to some of these numbers when he was in his prime, from 25 to 30. Well, let's see, at 23, when he came back from service, his first year back from service, he had 41 homers, 110 RBIs, and hit .345. Also had 13 triples. By the time he was 25, he hit 36 homers, stole 40 bases, and hit 20 triples. How about 20 triples in a season? 20 triples, 35 homers, 38 steals, all in his 26th year.
Yep. How old was he?
26.
You know, here's the thing about that, too.
Well, actually, I think he was 25, turning 26 that year.
The ballparks they played in were much more triple-friendly.
No, you're right.
Than they are now. That's the thing. You played in ball polo grounds and some of these people. Now, some
Chavez
of
those, Ravine.
Those places were massive ballparks where you hit the ball.
I wonder how many of his homers were inside the park because he could fly as well.
And some of those situations.
Yeah. I mean, here's something else, too, that would be a mind blower for a player now. In the year when he had 20 triples, 35 homers, 38 steals, he struck out 62 times and walked 76. He walked more than he struck out as he's hitting .300 with, a near 40-40 season and 20 triples. And winning a gold glove. And then he was MVP. So, I mean, we lost one of the greatest ball players ever.
No question. Willie Mays. That stat just brought back, this is not Willie Mays. It's somebody else we lost way too early. But I saw a stat about Tony Gwynn the other day.
Strikeouts?
No, he had more assists as a college basketball player than he did strikeouts in 20 years in the major leagues.
Wow.
He had 590 assists. He struck out 434 times in 20 years.
In 20 years, he struck out. That's 3 years worth of most players these days.
There are a couple of, the most prominent newspapers, the New York Times and the local paper to the Bay Area, the San Francisco Chronicle. They've written excellent obituaries of Willie Mays. I would encourage folks to check them out. He was on deck, Bill.
When Bobby Thompson hit the shot heard around the world.
On deck for the shot heard around the world. Yeah, they've named the World Series MVP the Willie Mays Award. That happened back in 2017. He's obviously an icon here in the South and in the state of Alabama because he's from here. Played some of his career in New York, both pre Giants move and with the Mets. But I would say the Bay Area is a place because he also made it his home later in life. Like there's a big Willie Mays statue in front of the ballpark. He's an icon there and really deservedly so everywhere else too. So tremendously sad news.
Oh, absolutely. With that, we're underway here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Jason Caldwell with us. We'll get to our first break. You'd love for you to join in. You can do so by calling The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We're right back with more here on the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, this is Billy Plummer here with Apex
Pest. At the control, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Well, Jason, let's stick with baseball a little bit because Auburn has been very active in the transfer portal.
Yeah, they have. It's been, kind of like everybody watching it. You look around the country and there's about 4,000 guys in the baseball transfer portal, which is insane to think about. But then again, it's not because you think about how many guys
you've got bigger rosters than you do in basketball.
It's not as big as football, right. But you have a lot more teams playing Division I baseball,
right.
And so there's a whole lot more.
And a lot of these guys are looking for a scholarship upgrade potentially too. This isn't a sport where everybody on every team is on full scholarship
Correct.
The way it is in football and men's basketball.
No, it is. It is much different when you start talking about, what it looks like. The scholarships, how much money you're getting here, not just NIL, but just, you're right, just the scholarship alone. You might get, 20% somewhere, some schools may not have scholarships enough to give more than six or seven. Just because people have 11.7 to give doesn't mean that all schools give 11.7.
It's reasonable to think some of these guys in the transfer portal were not on full scholarship at their original school.
Oh, I'm going to say that none of them were. I'm going to say that zero of these guys were on a full scholarship.
And now
bro,
and
full?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And they're hoping to get closer to full.
Closer to it when you combine potentially NIL and doing some of those things. I think that's what you hope for. Some of these guys, yeah. So, yeah, Auburn has continued to be very active. The last couple of guys, Bristol Carter, outfielder, potential center fielder, a guy that will compete with Kay Ballou in the outfield. East Carolina hit almost 360 as a true freshman last year at East Carolina. A couple of home runs. I think a guy that I think is going to have more power. He was actually the number one 26 major league prospect in the American Athletic Conference, according to Perfect Game.
You think one of them could be at a corner? You're talking about competing at center field?
I think him and Cade will compete at center field. Somebody else
would
slide.
It's a really good situation if you've got two guys who are
correct.
Capable of playing.
Yeah,
center.
And I think that's what you say. He's in the Cape right now. I looked last night. He's 6-for-13 in his first four games in the Cape. So that's pretty
good.
So a guy that can swing the bat, really athletic. Then Mason Cook is a pitcher.
Good.
Cable.
I wasn't exactly sure how it was pronounced, if it was Coke or – so it's Cook.
Yeah, Mason Cook is a guy that really big strikeout-to-walk numbers.
Yeah, no kidding. Almost 15 per nine.
Yes, mostly as a reliever for him. I think he'll get a shot to be a starter. I think that's the goal now for Auburn as you look and you go, you've added Mason Cook. Ryan Hetzler is the same way from Cal Baptist, right-handed pitcher. And then Sam Dutton is a guy that I remember from high school days coming out of Westbrook Christian right around Gadsden. Has pitched for 3 years at LSU, was actually at his best as a freshman.
When he was starting.
When he got starting role and got more innings. And the last couple of years it's been two-thirds of an inning here, one inning there. And you go out and give up two runs and you're pitching one inning. You don't really have a chance to work. Your ERA is going to balloon. And that's what you see more in the college game now than we've seen in the past. But those are three guys I think will all have a shot. Hey, see if you can get in the starting rotation, back into games. So I think from a pitching standpoint, they've done a good job so far. There's no question that lefty starter would be ideal. I mean, that's the number one spot that you're looking for is to find a guy that has experience from the left side that could potentially be a starter for you. So pitching-wise, that's where they are. From a position standpoint, they've added some really good pieces so far. Lucas Steele is a potential catcher, potential corner outfielder, maybe could play some first base. You know, he's a guy that can play all over the spot, but can really swing it.
Yep.
So a kid from Hoover originally. Eric Snow is a middle infielder. USF hit 350 as a freshman. Battled some injuries and didn't have as good a year this past year, but a guy that can swing it. Andrew Dutton is Sam Dutton's younger brother. I mean, not younger brother, but brother that played at
Birmingham. Yeah, he's his older brother.
Yeah, Birmingham Southern would be a fifth-year guy. Actually had a really big year for them. And a guy that could fill in, I think, is a utility kind of guy too. So those are your position players. I think
– you mentioned Snow?
Yeah, okay. I did, Eric Snow. Mm-hmm. I think for them now, maybe position player-wise – best available. Can you go find somebody?
Yeah,
and,
right
and
now
make
the,
yourself better.
The pressing need right now is
lefty
a lefty
pitcher. Lefty
pitcher. They've got a few guys that they're
there's some guys out there
in the picture.
And
for
there's guys added every day to this portal, and will be more continue to come out. And so I think that's kind of the goal for them. The problem is the left-handed pitcher in the baseball portal is quarterback, offensive tackle.
Yeah, quarterback, left tackle.
It's the same guy. Everybody's looking for that guy, and everybody wants to come after them. So that makes it the premier position in the entire portal.
I would say, though, it appears that that Auburn is freeing up some resources to be able to get
they've done a good job, I think, of figuring out, okay, what do you need? How much will it take to do some things in the NIL department? So, yes, they've done a good job of that. And so I think you look and also you think about what you have returning. Obviously, Ike Irish is back. Kay Ballou is back. You start thinking about some of these pieces that you have returning. And then McCam Tilly, there's some arms that pitched some significant time last year that were all really first-year guys. Can you take the step in year two? And if you do, then all of a sudden you look and there's some potential pieces on this pitching staff.
And, and there's a chance that that a couple of the newcomers, the youngsters coming in, they've got some potential. I mean, just there'll be quite a battle.
Yes, that's the other part of this is how do you look in terms of the draft? And, I honestly, Cooper McMurray, I would lean right now towards him probably being back. It depends on what it looks like from a draft perspective, how much money you get, how much you're looking for, all those things. That's probably the biggest one, maybe unknown in terms of current roster. I think everybody else, they kind of expect to move on. Then you mentioned the high school ranks. I mean, you got a couple of big pitchers, that will be, targets from a major league standpoint, potential first rounder, coming out of Baker High School, big right-handed pitcher. And so what does it look like when you try to get those guys on campus? But I feel like they've done a good job so far of kind of shoring up some needs out of the portal.
Meanwhile, College World Series, Tennessee looking to punch their ticket to the championship series as they lead Florida State 5-0 in the bottom of the fifth. All Tennessee has to do is win. Florida State's got to beat Tennessee twice.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure. Florida State, I guess you have to kind of measure it sometimes, and wasn't sure if they would go back to their number one guy. They didn't. They started the true freshman, got one out in the first, and since then it's kind of that was a 3-run first inning, and of course Florida State hasn't scored to this point yet. But I thought they might go back to their ace. They didn't, and they've been chasing it since then.
Can I ask real quick? I know we pivoted to college baseball a little bit there, but one of the big recruiting stories over the last 48, 72 hours, you know what I'm about to say?
Yeah, we can do that after the break if you want to, because it ties into potential Auburn news as well.
I mean, we're being cryptic right now. Do you know what I mean? This is a mystery right now.
I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about.
There's a school that got a couple of pieces of bad news.
Yes,
and Auburn. Let's talk about that when we come back.
All right, we'll do that when we come back. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, Drew at the controls. And yeah, I had seen the first part of the news you were talking about. Like I said, a little busy most of the day today. But yeah, some interesting news that is not directly Auburn-related, but it definitely could have an impact on Auburn's football recruiting.
Yep. They ain't go with it.
Well, seeing the news today involving, is it Justice Terry?
Justice Terry. Mm-hmm.
The defensive lineman, one of the top defensive linemen in the class of 2025. He had been committed to USC, originally from Manchester High School in Georgia. He decommits from USC, so USC losing one of the top defensive players in the class. That's pretty rough news, but earlier, it was just yesterday,
yep.
Isaiah Gibson pulled his commitment from USC as well. So, I mean, in the span of 48, 72 hours.
And that's a guy that visited last weekend.
Two top defensive players committed to USC in the class of 2025 both pull their commitment. And you've also got the uncertainty swirling around Juju.
Well, and what do all three of those guys have in common?
They're in the Southeast.
They're from Georgia.
State of Georgia.
All three of them from the state of Georgia.
Yeah, here's what it does. It doesn't directly impact Auburn, but it absolutely impacts Juju Lewis. And when you start talking about when you think about what's USC's issue, they can score points and they can do those things, but are you going to have any defense? Can you get the ball back? And you take away two of those pieces, especially two pieces that he knows. They've been making trips together, I'm sure, doing some of these things. Then it has an impact. Juju is at Elite 11 right now. All the quarterbacks are out there day two of the Elite 11. And I don't think there's any question that Auburn is right there. Can they make the final push? I think, and me and Christian, Clemente talked about it earlier this week. If it's not USC, then I think it's Auburn. And I think it's closer than it was before last weekend's official visit.
Conditions are becoming more favorable for it.
Correct. I think Auburn is right there. And here's what that does. You think that Auburn has recruited at a high level. You put a piece like that in play, and I think it's why if you're Auburn, if it's going to happen, you would love to. Hey, let's do this. We're going to do it before Big Cat weekend.
I don't want to get greedy.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
I don't want to get greedy about Juju Lewis because like that alone would be. Well, no. Hold on, because Juju Lewis would be monumental if Auburn can land Juju Lewis. Mm-hmm. You know that's the biggest quarterback sign. Bo Nix was a 5-star. Jason Campbell was a 5-star. It feels like Juju Lewis is another caliber of. I mean, closer to the number one overall spot in the in recruit rankings than either of those two quarterbacks were when they committed to Auburn. It would be a massive pickup. What about the other two 5-stars that decommitted from USC in the last couple of days? Gibson and Justice Terry.
Isaiah Gibson has visited Auburn. I think Auburn is very much in the picture with him. Justice Terry, Warner Robins High School in Georgia. Yep, Justice Terry has not been that guy, but if a Juju Lewis were to commit, then I'm telling you, he's a guy that could impact both sides of the ball, any position, because that's the kind of – this guy that people have been knowing for 3 years. He should still just be a junior in high school.
Those kinds of players are the ones that other players feel like, oh,
he's got a chance to
be the trigger man for a great team, and I can go be a part of that.
Yeah, and so I think it could be a snowball effect. We saw it last year with DeMarcus Riddick, an in-state linebacker. Kind of spurns Georgia, and it kind of kick-starts some things for Auburn. We've seen some momentum continue to build for them on the recruiting trail. Got opportunities for more of those guys, whether you look at Herbert Scroggins, the third pass rusher. I think Auburn is very close to a guy like that. He's not as highly ranked, but that guy is I think he's a freak rushing the passer. There's some of those spots. Auburn's still in there with a 5-star offensive tackle, very much so. There's pieces that are still there to push this thing to another level. And
I mean, it's already a top 10 class right now.
It's already a really good class. And when you start talking about what's still out there, I mean, you still got a couple of running back pieces that you could add, had visits with guys. There's still some spots. You still got a couple of 5-star wide receiver guys that are out there. There are some things that could really fall into place for this, and it could happen in a hurry if that first domino falls.
Yeah, so it is huge news because we have the dead period starting just,
5 days.
Monday.
The 24th. Yeah. Yep, so 24th to the 24th. So it is dead in terms of visits, but it won't be dead in terms of news. There'll be things happening. There'll be guys committing and doing those things, but no in-person contact on or off campus is allowed for that month from June 24th to July 24th. That's why that Big Cat weekend, July 27th, will be a big one because my guess is between now and that July 27th time, I won't be surprised if there's 5 or 6 more commitments.
Auburn's
could be more than that.
15 right now, so they could be over 20, you were thinking, before Big Cat.
I think there's that many guys that could do something between now and then.
It was last weekend was the last big weekend for Auburn before the dead period, and it was almost 50-50, I guess, 5 out of 12 were Auburn commits coming in, and that's good when you can really use those guys to help recruit the other ones.
Yeah, you did. You had some guys there. And Hollis Davidson's a guy that was committed previously.
That's true.
So knows all about Auburn. Most of the other guys were guys that had been on campus a bunch. When you think about some of those pieces, some of those guys. So I thought it was a really good weekend. I thought it was a very good month for them. When you think about, it was 37, 38 official visit guys in just about a 3-week span. It's a crazy time when you think about the month of June and everything that goes on with camp visits, official visits, all those things. But it's the way it is now, and this is the the month for recruiting. It'll continue through December, but this is the month where you make your hay, really, for most of these teams around the country.
Yeah, we were talking about it a little the other day, and I'd love to get your thoughts. I mean, it's hard to imagine you're going to disagree much, but it's amazing that in a little over a year and a half, I guess 19 months now, that Hugh Freeze has Auburn caught up as far as recruiting not only this year's players, but recruiting guys from down the road, because they were so far behind when he came in, just trying to recruit players for that class, and way behind on players for a year or two ahead. But I feel like they're right there now.
Yeah, no, I think from a roster standpoint, they did a great job of filling needs through the portal while also knowing that, hey, we want to build this program through the high school ranks. Mm-hmm. Instead of just selling out, it would have been easy to go, oh, this roster needs so much, let's just go bring in 35 portal guys. Well, when you start that process, then
it's hard to get out of it.
It's like junior college. It's like Jackie Sherrill at Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. Once you start signing 25 junior college guys a year, it's hard to go sign a bunch of high school guys because you're going to have a big gap somewhere. And I think they did a great job of going, okay, let's pick and choose portal, a little heavier in year one, not quite as heavy in year two, may not be quite as heavy in year three. I think it's always going to be a place you have to visit because you're going to go, hey, we missed on this guy. You're going to miss on guys. That's just the nature of this business. It's the nature. Hey, when the NFL misses on guys, you're going to miss on guys in college football recruiting. That's just the way it is. But you can go find a guy that, hey, he's proven, he's done it. We need that one spot, or we need this guy here. But they also want to continue to go, let's develop a guy from freshman to sophomore to junior, have that guy in the system, in the program, do those things. I still think there's value in that, and I think that's something that's going to pay off.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Well, you got me working on something here that you mentioned that is one of the things that you'll find when you go there to Auburn Undercover, and that is I didn't realize there's been an updated Auburn roster put out there and some really interesting things.
Yeah, it is.
As far as the sizes of
correct.
The players.
They did an update. I think they did an update on the overall website.
I noticed that. I like it. It's much cleaner.
And so with that came an updated roster. And so there's some notables. Nathan King kind of put together some of the notable changes, plus or minus in terms of the weight for some of the guys coming out. And there are some things that had some people surprised about TJ Lindsey. TJ Lindsey's now 294 pounds.
Yeah.
And I tried to tell people, look, like, I don't think he's ever going to be a pass rushing defensive end. His body type and frame looked to be a guy that was going to be a three technique before it's over with. He's now 294. He'll be an interior guy, and that gives you another athletic pass rush type interior guy. On the other end of that spectrum is Bobby Jameson Travis, who goes from 300 to 293, and I love that.
Hmm.
I think that quickness element, I think he's the guy that can give you that pass rush ability from the interior of the defensive line.
We've seen stories like Bobby Jameson Travis, first-year junior college guy. Nick Fairley's a great example of a guy. You know, it took a little bit of time for him to make that impact, but once he started making that impact, it was undeniable.
Yeah,
and I think there's
it's physically and body size, you're in a better spot as a junior college player than normally you are as a high school player, but sometimes it's even harder to make the jump. And he was a late guy; he didn't get here till the end of the summer last year. This is the time where he can make a jump.
And Bill pointed out that it felt like during the spring, DJ Reed's name came up more than Bobby Jameson Travis's did from players. And when we would talk about who was really pushing at the line of scrimmage, and that's not to say Jameson Travis wasn't having his moments too. But don't forget about the possibility of DJ Reed.
Yeah, I mean, could you got DJ Reed
in that rotation.
Malik Blockton up to 287 for him, which is a really good weight. Gage Keys now 291. Trill Carter 299. I mean, those are guys that along that defensive front they brought in to play and to make an impact. And Those guys have gotten bigger, and I think bigger and stronger going through the spring and now the summer conditioning program.
We were just talking about it with Coach Dunn, and the thing you have to avoid is you can't overtax three or four guys to play all your snaps on the defensive line because they're the only ones that you trust, which is a situation that I think where Auburn ran into in both of Coach Harsin's seasons, where he had a very limited rotation of defensive linemen.
No question.
And it was apparent in the second half of a lot of games, especially against deeper teams. Like that's not going to work. And Penn State and Arkansas start running away from you when those guys start to run out of gas a little bit in the second half. Auburn, I think that the hope would be that you can go to more of, depending on if a player or two steps up and they're undeniable.
Keldrick Falk is
going to
play
sure
more snaps than anybody on the defensive line.
But I think they would love to have
because he's better
the best
than anybody else up there.
I mean, they would love to have a number of players playing 20.
Yeah, and that's the thing. What you don't want to
have
is the same three guys.
Yeah, every snap.
If Keldrick Falk's a guy that gives you, play 65% of the snaps instead of 85, and you have some other guys that are playing 45, 35, and 20.
I mean, you brought in a couple of guys who were playing that kind of action in the Big 12.
Correct. Because when you think about those types of guys, Trill Carter, Gage Keys, you brought those guys in to provide some depth, potentially make a push. We'll see if one of those guys can make a push for a starting job. You got Jason Jones in there. And then you think about the Malik Blocked, and you mentioned DJ Reed, Bobby James and Travis. I mean, there are numbers there. And so can you find a couple of guys that step forward and maybe take on more of that role? If you don't, you rotate guys, keep them fresh, and in the fourth quarter you hope that your guys are fresher and better and able to finish it out. And I mean, it's not going to be 1988 Auburn where you're rotating Tracy Rocker and Ron Stallworth out and you're putting Nate Hill and Pig Goff and you're putting other NFL guys in there.
Not yet,
but you can get there.
Yeah.
That's not where you are, but you're, I think, in a much better position than you were 2 years ago.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Stick with us as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, y'all, this is Stephanie Grant.
ESPN 106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final few minutes of hour number one of the Wednesday drive. Final few minutes with Jason Caldwell, who's y'all are getting ready for a little vacation up the East Coast.
Yeah, going to take a little trip to do a little D.C. And do some history and some of those things. It's going to be warm.
It's hot. It is. I mean, you think about the heat here. A lot of times you get up there and there's nowhere for the air to move.
No air moving. So, yeah, so gotten a couple of tips and some things to do. Some park service buses and things that you can take between stops. And so – Got an idea, so do some of that. So looking forward to
getting
away for a
little
bit. I was
going to say that'll be cool. No, it'll be fun.
Yeah, you're looking forward to getting away a little bit. So that, just a chance to kind of recharge and relax for a little bit.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's really the opportunity. There could be a commit or something like that, but there's not as much going on.
Yeah, no, it's Yeah, there could be things like that happening, but the day-to-day visits, all those things will slow down, obviously, until the end of July.
And then yesterday we had a chance to meet some of the new additions to the Auburn Athletic family with softball and tennis coaches.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It really was. I was super impressed by everybody that we got a chance to talk to, but – Man, Kate Malvo is
a
dynamo. There's no question. People had wondered how's that going to work. I think you saw how it's going to work by listening and watching and hearing from them. You saw how it's going to work. That you have somebody that is that. I think probably the organizational side of things, the motivational speaker kind of things, and Chris Malvo is like the X and O grind it. Softball coach, and she said it, I thought, perfectly. And we've seen it, whether it be Hugh Freeze last year. I think we saw it from Butch Thompson this year. Trying to manage and juggle everything that you have to do as a head football coach, but not lose your, or a coach as a head, but not lose your identity. And I think both of those guys would tell you they'd probably, because of the portal, because of the NIL, because of everything that you have to do, probably got lost a little bit in the weeds and getting away from what they were. And I think Hugh Freeze realized it. I think Butch Thompson's realized it, that you got to have a way to still be what you are. Why did I get this job? I got it because I'm a pitching coach. I got it because I'm an offensive coach at coaches, whatever it is. And I think you see that with this combination. You have somebody that can let you be who you are, but still knows exactly what you want. And I think that's something that you know, people are like, well,
gotta be who you are.
It is, right. And it is just a different world than it was even 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. You have to figure that out. And I think this is a group that'll have, they'll be able to figure that out pretty quickly.
Jason, this hour has flown very quickly. Enjoy the vacation next week, but let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that is going on.
Absolutely. Tons of stuff going on. You can follow us at Auburn Undercover, part of the 24/7 network. Like I said, recruiting, there's basketball stuff going on, baseball portal, softball, all those things and everything in between. So follow us there. And I'll be on Twitter some for the next few days at ITAT Jason.
All right, Jason. Again, have a great trip, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
You too.
All right, we will be back with hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell in with us for hour number one. And we got started, and I felt we really should with, you know, some talking about the passing of one of the all-time greatest baseball players in Willie Mays. And, you know, I agree. I mean, Jason said, you know, he doesn't get enough or isn't talked about or seemingly thought of in the same vein as, you know, Henry Aaron or Jackie Robinson, or then you get, I mean, and when you're talking about great African-American baseball players, and Willie Mays has to be right there with not just one of the greatest African-American, one of the greatest ball players of all time. Just he was so good and was at his best and was the best or one of the best players in the game for right at two decades. That, to me, when we're talking, you know, we've talked Hall of Fame. I think we had a call coming in just a second ago. I saw it blinking. But, I mean, you know, we've talked about different Halls of Fame, and I was asked today, you know, is Les Miles a Hall of Famer? And we looked at the coaches in the College Football Hall of Fame, and there are so many that I feel, well, if they're in the Hall of Fame, then Les Miles is probably a Hall of Famer. But my feeling
from his era, would you feel that way about, like,
yeah,
like
when I looked at some of the guys that made it from the 60s and 70s.
But I'm saying, would you say that about coaches from Les's era? Are there coaches from Les Miles' era that like didn't, they don't think, because that I think complicates it a little bit.
Well,
right?
I don't know. Let's look and see who's gone in over the last 10 years. Yeah. And there are probably some guys that are about the same. But I think at times, it's easy for folks to feel like, well, more people deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I guess I'm a little pickier. I feel like Hall of Fame, especially players, I feel like Hall of Fame players need to have been, if not the best, they had better have been among the few best players at whatever they were doing in their sport, in their sport. if I mean, be it a pitcher or a hitter when it's baseball, but I mean, for any sport, I think they should have been one of the best and probably one of the best for a good period of time.
Now, what about players that cobble together very good careers, long careers without, because I think someone would say,
does that make him a Hall of Famer? Just because, I mean, are you going to tell me Jamie Moyer's a Hall of Famer because he pitched for 30 years?
I would think about actual Hall of Famers that this would fit. Like, I guess people would wonder if Eddie Murray was ever like,
Eddie Murray was an MVP.
That's true. I mean, so he did have a year.
So
or two
I mean,
where
if you were an MVP at some point, then that means
that's true.
That people thought you were the best that year.
But
at least in your league,
I think you know what I'm talking about, right? I agree. Murray was someone who, like, at the end of his career, you looked at his stats and you said, "Wow, like he's really compiled incredible,
he's piled up a lot of numbers,
you know, hits and home runs." But I wasn't sure if that was, I mean, I guess that was, wasn't that part of the, respectfully, isn't that, you know, aside from the racism, wasn't that another reason that folks objected to Hank Aaron taking Babe Ruth's record, was that Babe Ruth had been the most dominant player of his era, and Aaron maybe had not been as dominant in his time as a player as Ruth had been comparatively, and so people were like, "Oh, you're taking the home run title away from somebody who was overwhelmingly."
I think it was more racism.
You think it was more the first one?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, sure,
I do.
I mean, it was. Yeah,
and look, I was a Yankee fan. I mean, I didn't watch the Babe though or anything, but I mean, you know, you have players that once they are considered the best, there's going to be a group, and it's probably not going to be a small group that does never want it that taken away from them. I mean, so I understood some of the feelings, but you can't take it away when you're, I mean, Hank Aaron still averaged close to 40 homers a year for his career. I mean, he averaged 35 plus homers for every year that he played.
And the fact that Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle existed doesn't make Hank Aaron any less great than he was as a baseball player. And that's almost what that argument about Ruth. Well, because there were other great players playing at the same time as Hank Aaron, you know, he didn't have the same impact as Ruth. And it's like,
that's ridiculous.
That's making up a reason to discredit somebody. And in the case of Mays, I guess
don't you agree with what Jason said? People at times go, well, there are these guys, and Willie Mays' name doesn't get mentioned, and it should.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the 5 or 10 greatest players of all time, he's got to be in there.
I mean, in the and especially if you start breaking it up into eras, right? If you start talking about pre-color barrier, post-color barrier, pre-free agency, like he is a singular player, not just of his era, but one of the, you know, one of the best in the history of the game. And yeah, I hope folks and a really incredible story of his life. Raised largely by his wife's sisters or his mother's sisters, because he was born to a very young family, and his dad was working odd jobs and trying to play professional sports himself or whatever existed of professional sports back then. So if this, as sad as today is because of the passing of Willie Mays, if this gets people to learn more about Willie Mays and his life, and why he's such a significant figure, I think that's a bright spot you can find somewhere in the such a sad piece of news.
Yeah, passing at the age of 93 yesterday, just a day before the big celebration tonight, and then tomorrow night the Giants and the Cardinals playing at Rick Wood Field.
I would encourage you to check out the video of the announcement at Rick Wood Field last night. During the game, they made an announcement on the PA.
Oh, I didn't see that.
They made an announcement on the PA of Willie Mays' passing, and the fans responded with a long standing ovation for Willie Mays. There's also the video of the Giants radio call breaking the news.
Oh, is that right?
Willie Mays passed away, which is also tremendously emotional and worth your time as you could tell the lives that Willie Mays touched throughout his time in the sport and beyond.
So do we lose the call? All right, let's see. We may have a caller. Again, we apologize. We don't have the same situation as we had. We have to notice a little light flashing. Let's see. Do we have a caller with us on the line? Hey, go ahead. You're on the drive.
Yeah, I'm Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. I'm glad I saw the little light flicker. Usually, Drew has it over in front of him, but the phone was set to the side, and he couldn't see the light. I'm glad it just sort of caught my eye. What's going on?
I just wanted to mention, I worked with a real baseball fan one time. We both are, and I told him, I said, pick your best outfield of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, and Ted Williams. And
that's a darn good outfielder. I don't know. Well, I guess, you got Joe, who was a center fielder. I guess you'd move the Babe over to left and have Ted in right. But, man, Dan mentioned the song a little while ago. Willie, Mickey, and the Duke's a pretty good outfield of that same era. A little bit after those guys.
Yeah, I picked Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, and Roberto Clemente.
Ooh, that's a pretty darn good one too, man. Roberto Clemente had one of the most unbelievable arms you'll ever see from a right fielder.
Yeah, I thought mine was a little more athletic.
I don't think you'd lose with either one of those outfields in their prime.
And I'm a huge Mickey Mantle fan, but I couldn't move him ahead of any of those.
No, it'd be tough. And so was I, as a matter of fact.
The irony is that when you look at the pre-integration stars, and I'd say Babe Ruth chief among them,
yep.
You say, yes, they were dominant, but, right? Like, yes, they were dominant, however, you know, and it's not Babe Ruth's fault.
No,
that he was playing
absolutely.
He was playing in an all-white league at the time, but I do think that, as an all-time, I'd be fine with an all-time outfield that features more modern or more recent players than Ruth, including a Willie Mays or a Hank Aaron or a Roberto Clemente. Good call, Jerry.
All right, enjoyed the. Update on the recruiting too. Sounds good.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's great when we can get Jason talking about that because he's the man.
Appreciate it, Jerry. Good stuff. The Bill, I, for a long time, Willie Mays was. I mean, up until last night, Willie Mays was known as the greatest living ball player by a lot of folks. Who inherits that title in the event in the wake of Willie Mays' passing? Is it Bonds? I mean, they're not going to say.
Interesting because nobody.
They're not going to say it, but no. I think the answer. I think the right answer is Bonds.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, people want to say Griffey, or people want to say, I don't know who else would even be in the, Pujols maybe, or McGuire and Sosa aren't really with Jeter. Like I don't know what people are going to. You know what I mean? Like,
nah,
I don't know
who people try to say right. You're probably right. It'd be hard to argue because, I mean, pre any question about any substances, he was on a fast track to the Hall of Fame and a multi-MVP.
Yeah, and then there's also what he did in the early 2000s. Like there's also what he was able to do.
Oh, yeah.
There's also year after year of the best seasons.
That's a good question. I mean, we'll toss that out there for folks as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame folks who have that emotional attachment to Griffey. It's just I think that and I think injuries are a big reason why it's probably not Griffey and it's somebody else instead. A-Rod was probably on course.
Yep.
To be in that conversation before PED use damaged his reputation. As well, Bill, but guy who spent his whole career on the Three's Company, right? Barry,
absolutely, Barry at bat,
Barry Lamar Bonds, and as you mentioned earlier, the godson of Willie Mays.
Yep. Yep. Give us your thoughts on that. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. We're wide open here on the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, y'all. This is Stephanie.
State has scored. Tennessee has added another run, though. It is 6-2. Tennessee leading Florida State. Vols batting top of the eighth inning, and they've got runners at the corners. So looking to add a little insurance to their four-run lead. Two down, top of the eighth. And Tennessee, again, Tennessee with a win is in the College World Series Championship Series. In the meanwhile, the other side, Texas A&M, is one win away from being in and making it an all-SEC champion. Well, it's going to be, unless Florida State rallies, it's going to be an all-SEC championship series anyway, because the Florida Gators have battled back through the loser's bracket. They destroyed Kentucky. I think it was 14-4, something like that. They win.
15-4.
15-4. Kentucky, I mean, so Florida would have to win twice, but Florida has at least advanced here to the semifinals of the College World Series. All right, Tennessee is down in the top of the eighth. They are six outs away from advancing to the championship series. A little later on, Jason's saying they need 65 minutes in between games, so they won't be starting at 6. Probably closer to 7 o'clock tonight will be the Texas A&M Florida game. Florida would have to win tonight and then win again tomorrow to be able to make it to the championship series. A win by Texas A&M tonight will go ahead and move them in.
Tennessee, Florida State. In the top of the eighth right now with Tennessee, is that right?
They're going to the bottom of the eighth.
Going to the bottom of the eighth. Tennessee leading Florida State 6-2. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that game could be wrapping up. We'll see if Florida State can rally as they need to pick themselves off the mat, or they will be going home from the College World Series.
And you know, quite frankly, heading into the series, I think we said that Tennessee and A&M look to be the top two teams, and here they are on the verge of playing for the national title.
I mean, after watching Auburn play Tennessee and A&M this year, we came away thinking those were two of the best teams in all of college baseball. Mm-hmm. You think about Auburn starting. I mean, Auburn started conference play with those five. Was it Arkansas, Vandy? I'm not getting the order right. Well, maybe I will get the order right. Vandy, Arkansas, A&M, Tennessee, Kentucky, I think, were the first five series for Auburn.
Man, that sounds right.
And you know what? That Bill, those five teams are they were pretty highly rated.
They lasted a long time, didn't
they? Yes, they did. Yeah. And two of them could be playing each other for the national championship. We speculated. I remember asking Coop about this. We speculated, you know, could the eventual national champion have been one of those first five teams that Auburn saw mm-hmm. in league play in the draw, because Arkansas was one, and folks liked Vanderbilt's team had its ups and downs, and then certainly you've seen what Tennessee, A&M, and Kentucky have done in the College World Series. Sure enough, we could have both of the participants in the final among those first five teams that Auburn drew in SEC play to begin the conference slate.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and it's just crazy to think about how good this league is. Just top in every sport, just about. I mean, there's hardly a sport where the SEC is not dominant. I mean, you look back and we've talked about, you know, Auburn winning the golf championship, Auburn finishing second to Florida, and I believe the SEC went 1-2-3 in track and field.
No, I think you've got looking ahead to this football season, Bill. You've probably got four or five SEC teams that. Well, I mean, more than that, to think they can make the playoff. But, I mean, I think folks are expecting for maybe outside chance of five SEC teams in the playoff field for the first 12-team playoff in college football. Joe Lunardi updated his bracketology for men's basketball earlier this month, and he has 10 SEC teams in the draw for the NCAA tournament. Wow. In men's basketball.
That's not a shock.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's
And then, of course, there's softball.
Every single team is
a postseason team.
Yeah, you've got women's basketball, where a couple of the top programs in the country are located in the SEC. But, South Carolina, doing what, what they're doing in women's basketball, and then Oklahoma doing what they're doing in softball as well. As the as,
but yeah, just the thought of the expectations that all 15 schools that play softball are going to be in the postseason field.
The staying with baseball a little bit. Braves get the win earlier today in the day game. They're 10 games over 500, beating up on the Tigers.
They have taken advantage. And it played very well. Won what is it, 7 out of 8 or something? Yep. Now
Scoobel, the who been having a good season for Detroit. He was one.
Yes,
of the,
he had
one
been.
Of the top. One of the top, you know, Cy Young. One of the top players on the odds list for the Cy Young Award. Beaten up a little bit there by Ronaldo Lopez, continuing his.
He has been such a find.
Yes,
a guy
he has.
The Braves really converting from a reliever to a starter, and he has been a tremendous find for
them.
They've
had some good luck with guys that they just sort of tinker with. Remember that hot stretch that Huascar had a couple of years ago that you know felt like it wasn't supported by the larger numbers, but Lopez is having a strong start and 5 shutout innings today for the Braves as they've really played some of their best baseball of the season over the last 2 weeks or so.
And this is again without Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuña Jr., and Michael Harris.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, it's that they've. We'll see what they have to add, or if they feel like they have to add.
I'm sure they will. I mean,
just because they
played well, this is a great opportunity for them to add. They still have a lot of talent and highly touted talent in the minors. And again, my feeling is, now you don't want to strip your farm system, but I think the Braves have proven through the years that getting proven talent for potential usually works out.
Oh, sure. And even if
it's not like it's over the hill talent. I mean, that's the thing. I'm not talking Doyle Alexander for John Smoltz, but when you can get guys who are still in their prime that can help you, then because isn't the objective to win as much as you can as soon as you can?
Sure, but I think in the case of what the Braves are doing too, it's taking teams that have fallen out of the playoff hunt that don't have a use, you know, for maybe it's a guy. If you remember what the Braves did at the trade deadline 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? The trade deadline, was it three years ago? The one where they added Rosario
and Soler Peterson.
And Jock. And it's like those were
– That was just a couple of years.
Those were veterans. Yeah.
Years ago?
Yeah, okay. it was 20 years ago.
Wow.
It was 21 when they – I mean, they added guys who didn't seem to have much of a future on the team that they were leaving. They were probably going to be, I think all three of those guys were impending free agents.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make a lot of sense, I think, for the Braves to look at who looks like they have a free agent or two that will be leaving on a team that doesn't seem destined for the playoffs. You know, look for likely sellers and see if you can find somebody that could that could bolster the lineup. There aren't a ton of candidates that jump out at you, in part because there aren't that many teams in the National League that are clearly out of it.
That
right
feel
now.
We'll like see. They're out of it. Yeah. I mean, because for a lot of teams, the front office, the management's got to feel like if we start dealing some of those guys, the fans are going to feel like we've tossed in the towel, and they're not mathematically by any means out of the picture yet. Well, like we were talking, only two teams that are just more than just a couple of games out of wild card.
Some of these teams that aren't out of it might want to add. Might
right.
want to say let's
I think
go,
a lot of them would.
Let's go try to win. So it's going to be, I think, over the next 6 weeks. Hopefully you see some separation and you start to see some more teams drift towards the bottom where they can make a decision to sell, and I would imagine that teams like the Dodgers and the Braves and anyone else in contention in the National League, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Phillies add somebody
to try to keep pace. They're playing really well and have the best record in the National League.
Yeah, I think there's ways that things could shake up but you know, the original point, the Braves, I would think would be likely to add between now and the deadline.
All right, I had not really looked at the Braves game from today. The biggest news, I think, for the Braves today, not Ronaldo Lopez, but Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy was hitting .135 going into the game. He goes 4-for-4 with two-run homers for the Braves today. I mean, their hitters are starting to hit. You know, Austin Riley got hot last week. Matt Olson's been picking it up a little bit. Ozzie Albies with a game-winning homer. Now
three,
Sean
three's
Murphy.
Three's company members, well, the three of them.
Yeah, well, but now Sean Murphy with a pair of two-run homers.
Darno mashed a homer over the weekends. Been hitting the ball a little bit better, too. So, no, I think there's a hope. And then Ozuna has been...
I heard some talk about this the other day. All right. That reminded me a little while ago when we were talking about Willie Mays, I wanted to bring this up, and I'm glad you mentioned Ozuna's name, because statistically, he ought to be your National League MVP right now. He is leading in the Triple Crown. He's leading the National League in homers, RBIs, and batting average. Does he get any talk about MVP? No. Shohei does, and people are like, but Shohei... there's been an argument. He deserves it, even though he's a DH. Well, Marcell Ozuna is putting up better numbers. I mean, Triple Crown.
I think if Ozuna finishes the season leading in the categories,
if he wins
leading
the Triple Crown and doesn't win the MVP,
I think that
he probably
reason,
won't though.
I think if he wins the Triple Crown, he has an excellent shot of winning the MVP. I think the question is,
he would finish second if things keep going the way it is. Shohei will win the MVP because. He's Shohei.
Oh, no, I think there's a belief that Shohei is going to eventually overtake him in these categories, and that's why people
are
betting
on him. Even if he doesn't, he'd still win.
I think you look at
the polls right now, and people are saying Shohei's your MVP.
Well, that's because they think Shohei is going to eventually overtake him in some of those, like in homers and things like that. I mean, if he finishes, I think the
popularity vote, it'll be Shohei.
I think if Ozuna finishes leading in all three categories and Ohtani doesn't pitch this year, it would be very surprising to see another hit. Now, maybe Ohtani could have, the OPS edge and some of the other advanced.
He also steals bases.
And steals some bases. I mean, I think it's interesting that Bryce also currently has better MVP odds than Marcell Ozuna on the board. I think some of that's people betting on Ozuna
of it is just because of who they are.
See, but on the odds board?
Yes.
Like I would think that maybe some of that is influencing it. But I think some of it is betting against Ozuna being able to keep this pace up for an entire season.
It would be pretty amazing if he led the league in batting average.
Yeah,
he's been a guy that could lead the league in homers and RBIs anytime he's going well.
And if you're betting Ozuna to be the MVP, you're betting on him not just based on what he's done to this point. It's betting on him to keep this up and finish at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why people are skeptical that he's going to be able to stay at the top of these. I mean, if you stopped today and said who's the MVP of the first 80 games,
almost half.
Yeah,
right at the end of the first half.
First
right now.
80 games, it should be him. But that's not how the MVP works, right?
If you read or listen to people talking when they say who's your first half MVP, he's not mentioned because people just feel like, well, it can't be him.
Oh, I would have no problem saying that he's the first half MVP of the season so far. Do I think he's going to finish?
Oh, I don't think he will.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, do I think?
But I just think he's not getting enough credit for what he's done, especially in a lineup that hasn't been very good around him.
Your MVP, if you wanted to bet on the year, the odds for who's going to win the award at the end of the season, Ohtani right now leads. He's plus 145, so about 1.5 to 1. Bryce Harper's at 3 to 1. Ozuna 7.5 to 1. Freddie Freeman 12 to 1. Fernando Tatis Jr. also 12 to 1 in the MVP odds. And again, I mean, I think that there's some of that might have to do with Ozuna's legal trouble popping up, the domestic violence incident that popped up a couple of years ago. But I mean, as far as his reputation.
Yeah,
like,
I agree. But I just think that the other guys are also just more popular players. Period. All of them are much bigger names as far as just to the non-serious baseball fan.
But I would think that if someone is, if you're skeptical that Ozuna, like it has to do with Ozuna keeping up the pace that he's on right now. Like, I would think that's the biggest thing.
I don't think he's hitting that wildly above what he can do. But I mean, we'll see. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join us. If we have some time. We may rerun our interview with Auburn AD John Cohen, but again, your calls come first here on The Drive.
A historically this very significant thing and still would be a tremendous achievement for anybody. You had Miguel Cabrera do it a couple of years ago. We're in the Ohtani versus Ozuna argument right now, folks would point out Ohtani has a I think he's got the edge in on base percentage. I know he has the edge in OPS and OPS adjusted right now over Ozuna. I believe they're now tied in the lead for home runs. Mm-hmm. In a situation where Ohtani had the edge in, if they were tied in home runs and Ohtani had the edge in on base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS adjusted, total bases, doubles.
You've gotten into more large, now.
I'm just saying, but those are statistics right now where Ohtani does have the edge mm-hmm. over Ozuna. And if he were to finish with the edge in those stats, even if Ozuna had a higher batting average and more RBIs.
I don't know. I am old school. You win a triple crown, I think I'd be hard pressed to see anybody else.
I would need to know the candidacy. I would want to know the candidacy of somebody. If player A won the triple crown and you wanted player B to be the MVP, I would really want to know where player B outshine player A, if it's not in batting average and RBIs. Like, I would, because I think the way you just said,
the percentages are skewed though by walks, because walks don't, you know, walks help your, they help your on base percentage, they help your OPS, they don't hurt, you know, they don't take away from some of the others, and it gives you a higher percentage where total numbers at times can be better. I can see the importance of all these numbers and I understand them. But again, I put more into somebody driving a run in than drawing a walk.
Yeah, no, and I don't want to empower like WAR and some of the other, like, you know, more newfangled statistic that people would get into to break this up. Like, I'm just thinking, like, in the case of, like, I would agree that it would be, I would need to see a heck of a case from player B.
I don't think
folks who think Ohtani's the MVP right now, I don't think that's just based on his popularity.
No, I don't think
either,
it's just, but yeah. I think there are some that will just because of his name, of who he is.
But there are some numbers that would argue Ohtani
I'm not saying voters don't pay any attention to all the numbers, no. But there's some that pay more attention to who it is than what they've done.
It does seem to be right now, though, Ohtani and Ozuna and Bryce Harper's in that mix as well, and I would imagine because Bryce is somebody who – did Bryce deal with – was it an injury early on?
Yes.
With Bryce getting the injury slowing his start, you could see Bryce Harper having an incredible next 90 days or so finishing out the season. But, I would agree with you. Hard-pressed is a good way to describe. Like, if someone is the Triple Crown winner – and they're not the MVP, I'd really want to know why the other guy's going to win.
334-321-1390. I don't know if do we have time?
It's about 20 minutes.
Yeah. I tell you what, we'll hold off.
You sure? Okay.
I think we can hold off and run the interview with John. May do that. You might do it tomorrow, but I mean, you got Ferg in,
and you got Don on Friday.
I've got Don done Friday.
We can do that.
Yeah, we may do that. We'd love your thoughts. Since we got into that one during the break bottom of last hour, love your thoughts on that. I mean, hey, it is baseball season. I mean, I know that there's not as much fervor in that as there is in football. Speaking of numbers, I can get into some of the numbers, and I'm glad that Jason Caldwell brought up the fact that Nathan King has a story up about some of the numbers for the Auburn football players.
Well, let's not move on from baseball
because I'm just saying we can get into that in a
like
little
if,
bit.
If the RBI is like less fashionable as a stat to decide, like, oh, you know, the one thing I think that is important about RBIs is you can't get them if you're not in the lineup, right? Like, that's a guy's
true.
Like 162, the more games you play, the closer you are to 162 games, like that can, and that's something that may not show up in your stats, you know, your average or your slugging percentage, your OPS. You know, if you're somebody who was in the lineup and readily available all the time, you know, you have a better chance of finishing with a high RBI total. You know, it's a stat that people are weighing less in some of the individual awards.
Right.
But it's
if you're playing on a team that has nobody else getting on base, I mean, sure, you're not going to get as many.
You're probably not going to win the MVP RBIs. Anyway. In that situation.
All right. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to the phone. Go ahead. Yeah, you're on the Drive. Who've we got?
Yeah, this is Jerry.
Oh, hey, Jerry.
I just wondered if you saw where Snitker gave Ozuna a little bear.
He did what now?
And he gave him a stuffed bear.
Oh, okay. Good. I was wondering if he gave him a live animal. It's like, oh, okay.
No. It's a stuffed bear, and he's putting him on the bench, and they're decorating him with hats and all kind of scarves and stuff.
No, I hadn't seen that. Now, if unfortunately, I'm one of those that I don't have access to see most of the Braves games. So, I mean, I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Jerry. Yeah, back on Saturday, Brian Snitker gave a stuffed animal to Marcell Ozuna. I think it was commemorating the 20th home run of the season, and it sounds like it's become something of a mascot for the team, and they're going to they're going to keep that they're going to keep that around for the Big Bear.
Oh, okay. All right, 334-321-1390.
You mentioned the football numbers. Anything strike your?
Well, I'll tell you what. We can get to break. Okay. We'll talk about that. Okay. And we'd love for you to join in. Still plenty of time for you to join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Again, our thanks to Jason Caldwell for joining us in hour number one. If you missed any of that or any of our shows, we encourage you to check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcast of the Drive presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. You can check it out however you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Again, all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And you know what I failed to mention? We just jumped right in, started talking about things here in the second hour. Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. Check them out at orthoclinic.com. Let's see, has the Tennessee game gone final? It's in a break right now, so I don't know. Let me look. I can check. Yes, Tennessee is in the College World Series Championship Series. They defeat Florida State 7-2. So Tennessee moves on. They will take on the winner of Texas A&M and Florida. Again, Florida would have to beat Texas A&M twice. Texas A&M just needs one win. So it will be an all SEC College World Series. That's not a huge surprise.
No, I think that was something that seemed likely when you were watching the SEC play during the season. I mean, the preseason polls had multiple SEC teams in the top 10. And sure enough, as we speculated, you're probably looking at two teams. We'll see. But if it's Tennessee A&M, it's two teams that Auburn saw in the first 5 weeks of conference play, and two of those teams that you came away thinking could be as good as anybody in the country.
The top three seeds nationally for the NCAA tournament were Tennessee, Kentucky, and Texas A&M. Florida knocked off Kentucky to get to the right to play out of the loser's bracket against Texas A&M. So you're most likely going to have the number one and number three seeds, and both from the SEC playing in the College World Series. So, yeah, we were talking about it a while ago. I mean, this league is it is just so, so good in every sport. All right, one of the things that we mentioned briefly, and Jason talked about it a little bit, is that the Auburn football has updated the heights and weights, the measurables for the players, also added the numbers for the few newcomers. I mean, Auburn's added some players from the transfer portal, and they had a couple of signees that weren't in during spring. And for the most part, there have been some weight gains. There are hardly any players that are down from the weights they were listed during the spring. Jason mentioned one, and Bobby Jamison Travis down from 300 to 293. I see Robert Woodyard has shed 13 pounds to go from 233 to 220, and he was having a good spring as well. But most of the players are up, and there's some significant weight gains. I mean, you look along the line of scrimmage defensively. Jason Jones, who was listed at 338 heading into spring, is now 355. That is a 6'6", 355-pound nose tackle.
You mentioned, not to jump around too much, the incoming offensive lineman, Seth.
Seth Wilford, the junior college offensive lineman, was listed at 6'6", 305 at the start of spring. He's now listed at 6'5". He's the only player I see that's gone down an inch. He's 6'5", 329. So he's up 24 pounds since the start of the spring.
Somebody who could be in Auburn's rotation of 8 to 10 offensive linemen, because that's another thing Hugh Freeze has talked about, is wanting to have – I mean, you start 5, but he wants 8 that he feels good about, a guard, a center, and a tackle who don't start, that can go in and not miss a beat. And if that number needs to be 9 or 10 based on how many players deserve playing time, you know, they'll go for it. And Seth Wilford, absolutely somebody who – I mean, just the same way Too Tall was – not necessarily one of the first 5 they imagined on the offensive line when the season started, but he worked his way in, and the more he played, the better he got. I think Seth Wilford could have that kind of season. Interesting to see the way he's apparently taken to the nutrition plan they've got there for him with what was that number, Bill? What was the weight gain?
24 pounds.
24 pounds since spring to now.
And because of that, let's see, I'm not just – well, actually, he is – Auburn has
– What kind of time period are we talking about with that 24? Like the last weight would have been probably recorded. They updated them.
It was right at the start of spring practice.
Right at the start of spring practice.
Which was what?
End of February? Like last week, the last week of February?
Right around the 1st of March.
Yeah. So
so it's April, May, June, 3 and 3.5 months.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
eaten.
Yeah, no kidding. On the offensive line, Auburn only has 2 players who are under 300 now on the offensive line of the.
I did that once, but it wasn't in preparation for football
too.
Season, Bill. Yeah,
I mean, out of 6, Auburn has 16 offensive linemen, and only 2 of them are under 300. They are Tate Johnson, who has dropped from 302 to 281, and
senior season for Tate Johnson,
yep,
right? I mean,
that is right. Redshirt freshman Clay Whedon is 286. Everybody else is at least 300 pounds on the offensive line. So I mean, they've got depth and they have size.
That's not.
I like this offensive line.
Thornton does not seem like he wants to go into seasons with an undersized offensive line.
No,
that's not an issue. You know, he seems to feel pretty good about getting the guys and. You know, listening to him talk in the spring, it's not as though, you know, yes, he wants, he's concerned about bulk and size and stuff like that, but I think he's more, it's efficiency. It's being able to put it on in the right places and still be as effective as possible. And it's a promising group that he's got.
On the other hand, on the defensive line, there are only 2 players who are over 300.
And one of them is Jason Jones.
Jason Jones is 355, and Isaiah Rakes, who is transferring in, is 323. So your noses, your 2 nose tackles are well over 300 pounds. Now, it's not to say that they're light. They're lightweights by any means.
Do you have a lot of, like, 290 to 290?
You've got an awful lot of that. Keldrick Falk, 288. Bobby Jamison Travis, 293. Gage Keys, 291. TJ Lindsey, 294. Trill Carter, 299. Zeke Walker, 291. DJ Reed, 285.
These
are all 280 to 300
they're
pounds.
They're all a trip to a barbecue restaurant away
that's
from
right.
300 pounds, right? Like, that's what they're we're talking
just,
about.
Yeah, I mean, an extra helping.
They're a visit.
They're just an extra helping away.
They're
a
visit from Don Dunn away from being 300-pounders themselves. So while that stat is true, that right now Auburn only has 2 defensive players actually listed over 300, they have a bunch of guys that, you know what, if we weigh them right now, any one of them might be pushing the 300 level.
You know, I mentioned Champ Anthony a while ago because I think that was significant to see him go from 164 after the bowl game to 182 right now. There's some other ones. Kyan Lee was at 172 in the spring. He's now 181. Let's see. I don't see a defensive back under 175 right now. Okay. Antonio Kite's the only defensive back. He is the lightest defensive back at 175. And Auburn had some guys that were in the 160s this past year. So you've got a little more size there in your secondary as well. So it appears, I mean, I haven't seen all these guys, but the numbers look good for the updated heights and weights for the Auburn football team.
Bill, have a blast tomorrow. You and Matt going up to Rickwood to see the special Thursday night game in Birmingham.
The MLB game at Rickwood.
MLB Classic, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Wimp told me to be trying to find parking like today, because good luck trying to find it tomorrow at Rickwood. So we'll see what we can do. But yeah, looking forward to that. I'll be back Friday. You and Justin Ferguson got it tomorrow, right?
That's the plan.
And then Dan will be gone Friday. Don Dunn will be in with me then. But that's going to wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.